You're listening to Extra Time Radio.
In the Octagon, out in San Francisco, Matt, the armchair analyst, Doyle.
Do you like not care about your hygiene? Is that what we're hearing here?
I'm actually an obsessive hand washer.
They're maybe the best team in the MLS.
Wait a minute. No, Cashman, that's wrong.
Why?
Because, no, that's absolutely wrong.
That's why he's here!
Oh, from New York, you are listening to Extra Time Radio on SiriusXM FC, Channel 85 and MLSsoccer.com. I am Andrew Wiebe. With me, as always, Matt the Armchair Analyst Doyle, out in the Octagon and here in the broom closet with myself, David Goss. It is Thursday, a bunch of big games coming up this weekend. We will talk all about the New York Derby because, of course, we will. And we'll talk to RJ Allen in the second segment. He is, and I don't hesitate to say this, Dave, a cult hero here in this office.
Yeah,
can you explain why that is?
Well, one is because he was coaching a U10 team in Staten Island, and now he's like a snub for an MLS All-Star within a few months. The second is because...
Well, a few months, a year and a half.
Okay, fine.
2 years.
A year and a half.
Yeah.
No, not 2 years. Well, he joined last season.
Right.
Mid-season. We're in mid-season right now.
Yeah, okay.
So 1 year.
Okay, year and a half. Fine.
Second of all, he is the oldest of three brothers, I believe, and one of them is a player for the New York Red Bulls.
Right.
And that just gets me so riled up. They're two Jersey guys. I'm a metro area guy as well. And they're just like seem to be like salt of the earth guys from the area. And they're split by this rivalry and nothing – to me, could be better than that.
Old Bridge, New Jersey is where they're from, which is to me sounds like the most New Jersey town name of all, township name, I guess. I don't know. New Jersey being New Jersey of all time. Some other news here before we jump into things. U.S. Open Cup, we're down to four. We're down to the semifinals. The Revs moved through. They beat Philadelphia Union on PK. Chicago thumped the Fort Lauderdale Strikers. It's all MLS teams from here on out. Houston losing to FC Dallas. Who else? Fabian Castillo with the winner late on, and then LA Galaxy with a big comeback against Seattle Sounders to win 4-2. They will all move on. We'll talk about that in just a second. We'll talk about Jason Christ to Orlando. That happened. We talked to Paul Tenorio. He basically said it would, and then it did. We got to break that one down, see what Jason Christ is dealing with the other expansion team from 2015. There's also some more trade news, some transfer news. But first, what is this? What is this Mario Balotelli stuff to MLS? What is going on? I keep seeing it on Twitter. I see Jason Davis tweeting about it. Everybody's getting on board. They're trying to convince Rob Stone. Is this real or is this just us having fun?
I think it's people having fun at this point. And it's not just on Twitter. I did a Facebook live chat and there were people just spamming questions about Balotelli coming to MLS. And given where he is in his career, where he's kind of fallen off the map and needs to sort of recalibrate himself, and the fact that Giovinco was able to do that to an extent, and maybe Gio Dos Santos is able to do that to an extent, it does kind of make sense. The big problem with it, well, it's twofold. None of the big spending teams, that the ones that we would consider that are usually the type to be in for a guy like Balotelli, has a DP slot open. And two, I mean, if you're an MLS manager in an MLS locker room, do you want Mario Balotelli coming in there and trying to keep that guy motivated and fit and engaged for 34 games this season?
Doyle, I'm not worried about what managers want. I'm worried about what I want, and I want somebody setting off fireworks out of their kitchen sink. I want it all. I want Mario Balotelli.
You want the page views.
Yeah,
I'll tell you what, Mario Balotelli
and the fun
would
and just
make
the fun.
Our lives a lot easier.
He would. Oh, come on, LAFC, no chance. Do you put him in LA? I mean,
they're not playing for 2 years.
I know.
Yeah,
you
so you loan him.
That's the thing. If Miami and LAFC were coming in 2018, then I could see it. But like, is Minnesota gonna sign Mario?
No,
Balotelli?
I actually think that's an even better one. That's a reality show.
LAFC
Mario Balotelli
to
Minnesota. Yeah,
LAFC signed him. They loan him to Orange County Blues for a year. He dominates at Orange County Blues, and then they bring him back up. Listen, physically, and by physically I mean technical ability as well as athleticism, like potentially top five player on the planet.
Right.
Hairstyles, fashion, dates the celebrities, is hilarious, and did that thing against Germany where he beat the German national team by himself and then ripped off his shirt and was like the most chiseled human being on the planet. All of that. I want all of that.
Yeah, I'm in for that as well. I'll throw down. How much do I got to throw down?
Right.
I don't have any like Gam or Tam hanging around, but if
we did a fundraiser to raise money.
Ooh, ETR for Mario.
To get a team to sign.
Yeah.
We'll pay for it. I'd pay for that.
Okay. How much would you pay? Let us know. At Extra Time Radio, extratime at MLSsoccer.com. We'll stop kidding around here. We'll go straight to Jason Kreis. Orlando have a new head coach. The writing was on the wall. It seemed this was going to be what went down. Paul kind of walked us through what some of the trepidations were as far as the management of the club and where it stood and the roster. Now that it's done, Doyle, I want your reactions. This is a good move for Orlando, certainly, I think. I don't think there's any way to get around that. Was it a good move for Jason Kreis?
I just realized something. If Orlando City sell Kyle Larin.
Yep.
They have a spot, yep. And Kaká would be the perfect mentor for Mario Balotelli.
As much as we try to get away from it, we're coming right back to it, baby, full circle.
Anyway, Christ, I mean, he makes a lot of sense given what I think is a good young core, a good young base of talent on that team, even if they sell Kyle Larin. They have a lot. It's still a little bit of a surprise, but given the reassurances or the assurances that the front office have given out, given the investment this team makes in youth and in their USL team, given the stadium that's coming next year, it's a really good job. It's a really good job, and I think Kreis is a really good fit for any team that wants to win long term. They are, like we said last time, they're going to have patience. They're going to have belief in the process to, you know, crib a line from another sport. And I think that the most important thing about Jason Kreis at RSL was he ended up with Nick Raimondo and Nap Orchards and Kyle Beckerman and Javier Morales. He was able to get that spine together and keep it together for 7-8 years. He's got to do that. Like, that has to be job number one for the rest of 2016. It's not necessarily winning. It's getting the pieces so that you can win long term. I think they have a guy like that in Christian Higuita. I'm not sure who the other long term pieces are, assuming, again, that Kyle Larin is actually, if the right offer comes in, you have to make that move.
The news today out of Orlando is that no contact has been made from Benfica to Orlando City. They hadn't heard about that link before. That's kind of what has been floated around. No word on whether that's just kind of PR side and maybe some things are going on in the background, but I have to imagine there are foreign clubs coming after Kyle Larin with the performances that he's had so far. The one part that we wondered about was, you know, as we said, management, and the majority owner here is Flavio Augusto da Silva. He is Brazilian, of course. There's been some debate about that. Jason Kreis went and flew to Portugal to meet with him, felt very good about those conversations. And one thing I found interesting is that in all this hiring process, they've really emphasized the board. Orlando City have. That's the decision-making body. It's not just Flavio saying this is what we'll do. It's a group of people making this decision. And I think that's got to be reassuring for Kreis, and that's got to be reassuring for the fan base, that it's not just the whims of one man. They're going about a process in a certain way. There is also some word today from Phil Rollins that it will almost be a committee approach to personnel. Rollins, the assistant GM that they have in place, and Jason Kreis as well. And that was one of the big concerns, I think, for a lot of people when it came to Kreis taking the job, was would he have the leeway, as you say, Matt, to build that core, to be a big voice in that process and make sure he's getting the guys he wants. At least initial indications are that he will, but we'll have to wait and see what goes on with that. We'll talk more about Orlando here in the second segment. They, of course, play Columbus Crew SC this week, and the Crew making a signing.
Which, by the way, Jason Kreis will not be managing that
game. He will not. He will start after that game. The Crew did make a signing. We'll talk about that in just a bit. But there were some big trades here. A guy that you didn't mention, Doyle, as part of that, the core of that RSL team is Fabian Espíndola. He had moved on and been traded, but he's been traded once again, the designated player going from D.C. to Vancouver. For some GAM, 20 goals, 17 assists for DC since 2014. He's got 64 goals, 36 assists all time in MLS. He's been around since 07. He really has a long career here, almost a decade at this point. Vancouver get a forward, not necessarily a pure goal scorer, but more of a creator, Dave? Does this make sense for them? I mean, this is the second kind of old-timey MLS forward they've picked up, yeah. And I know Fabian would probably like do some terrible things to me if he said heard me say that.
So
but
would Blas Perez.
I know. That's the other guy I'm referring to here. Does this make sense?
If he can stay healthy, yes. I know he's not a natural, you know, number nine, but he's played down the middle for DC United in the past, and when he's been on the field, he's created goals. His production's dropped this season, but I think less is required of him in Vancouver. They really need a guy who's going to take, you know, advantage of opportunities around the box and have confidence and take, you know, shots. They don't need the creativity part, I think, as much in the rest of the field, which means he can probably do less running. The only question mark is health, and he hasn't been healthy, and they need someone who can be healthy. And that was the issue with Blas was, well, he's not going to give it to you for 30 games for the rest of the season for 70 to 90 minutes. Now, I don't know if you confuse them into, like, one healthy person. If you could do that, that might work. Yeah. But from a soccer point of view, I don't hate the move. It's not the big move. I think it's we couldn't find the guy as a DP that we want to be our center forward right now. So let's wait until January. Let's wait until that offseason. This is a move that can keep us competitive this season.
Final year of the contract for Fabian. So that's a big part of that as well. You know, Kakuta Mane went down recently, a left footer in Fabian Espindola. You'd think that he'll probably get some time out left. And then Doyle, you got to be pumped. Patrick Mullins looks like he's going to get some opportunities. He's headed to DC United for Gam Tam in an international spot. I mean, you've got to be giddy. You've been calling for somebody to grab this guy for a while.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how quickly he becomes a part of that core. Because, I mean, if you look at his per-minute production over the course of his career, he's basically a starting caliber forward in this league. He has, I think, 10 goals and 7 assists in about 2,600 minutes, which is the equivalent of a full season. And look, this is suddenly DC have... not just Alvaro Saborío, but they have Alhaji Kamara, and now they have Patrick Mullins. They're loaded on the flanks with guys like Lloyd Sam, Patrick Nyarko, Lamar Nagel, if Chris Rolfe gets back. And it looks like this is all designed to give the Argentinian playmaker they signed this offseason more toys to play with. To get the ball off of Espindola's foot and to give more of it to Luciano Acosta, he's been productive. He hasn't been game-breaking, but you could see hints of his, I think, all-star caliber talent there. And it does signal a new direction for DC because they've been a 4-3-3 or 4-1-4-1, if you want to call it that. They've been a team like that for now about a month and a half, and that does look like that's their future primarily because of Acosta.
Patty Mullins, we'll see what he can do. Can he live up to Doyle's... Doyle's hype train here. I think he's got a decent chance.
Do we think that DC does more now? Because they freed up a DP spot with Espindola.
Right.
So is Mullins a good piece, but he's not the answer?
Oh, he's not. He's definitely not the answer, I don't think. I don't think any team would have brought him in. He's a good roll of the dice on a young player with plenty of upside. Probably.
Which they did.
I don't expect DC to use that DP slot this year. Maybe they do something in January because Saborío, I think, comes off the books. Marcelo Sarvas has been really good this year, but he'll be, I think, 36 entering next season, and they need to have, I think, a high-level defensive midfielder in there. Plus, there's the chance that Steve Birnbaum moves on. So there are a lot of moving pieces here with DC United. So I suspect them to actually sit tight for the rest of this window and then reassess in January.
We do know that Ben Olsen did say, though, a week or two ago that they would make moves, that they had some flexibility. Lloyd Sam's a move, Patrick Mullins a move. That may have been what he meant. Or he may have been saying to the fans, we're going to upgrade, don't worry, which they haven't.
In-league moves, those two moves are about as good as you can get. Realistically, with players available and being able to bring them in, those are two great moves for DC United. We'll see how they do the rest of the way. Some other notes for you here on the transaction front. TFC signed Toussaint Ricketts, Canadian international forward, 12 goals and 50 caps. The 28-year-old really has bounced around Europe for a long time now. He was in the Turkish second division, and they apparently weren't paying him. So he's going to a club that'll pay him, perhaps give him some opportunities. With Josie on his way back, that's a crowded forward line, as well as Jordan Hamilton, of course. So we'll see if he can get minutes there. But a move there. David Egger also signed with the Whitecaps, another Canadian international who's been over in Europe for a long time, last with Sheffield United. And then some news on the Atlanta front. They're expected to, according to Taylor Twellman, who you know doesn't get a ton wrong, to announce Hector Villalaba as a designated player, perhaps even within the next 24 hours. So things really rolling along in Atlanta. Still no head coach there, but it seems like they have an ethos that they're going for. Darren Eales says an attacking one. That's got to be exciting for fans down in the Southeast.
If you're an Atlanta fan and you're waiting for them to come out and they haven't played yet, if you watch some Charleston Battery games, they're goalkeeper Alexander Tambakis, who was their first ever signing, is playing for them. Andrew Carlton as well, the 17-year-old, got a run out against Rangers.
Oh, really? Nice.
I think he's 15, not 17.
15. Sorry, U17. Sorry, U17. I meant to say U17 player, 15-year-old. So if you're trying to get a little bit of taste of what might be coming, I know Dirty South Soccer has been covering Charleston for them, but tune into some games, maybe even on Saturday, 4 p.m. Eastern time on YouTube.
Somebody you might know might be calling that one. Yeah. Who would that be?
Mr. Matthew Doyle?
I'm not sure. I'm not sure who it would be. Let's talk U.S. Open Cup before we hit the break. R.J. Allen on the other side. He is like the Kurt Warner of MLS at this point, if I'm going to throw out a reference there. Let's start with the Revs in Philly. Philly, we said they want this. They want it bad. They will not get it. They will not get to another final for the third year in a row. A 4-2 win in PKs for the Revolution. Sebastian Letou misses his PK, which is shocking because that guy is a U.S. Open Cup monster.
Saved.
Oh, it was saved?
It was saved. It wasn't the best shot ever, but it was saved.
Wasn't the best shot ever. That's a glowing.
But it wasn't like terrible.
Yeah.
It's one of those in that in-between place. He didn't hit it straight.
It wasn't like Zaza.
Right.
No, right. He didn't do anything ridiculous, but he didn't hit it straight, but he didn't miss the frame. That's a positive.
It did not go in. It did not cross the line. We can settle on that.
And Philly has to be mortified because Javon Watson basically had an open tap-in off a free kick because they fell asleep defensively to take a 1-0 lead. Fabian Herbers with the equalizer, Doyle. This is a guy that you like, I know. You've liked what you've seen from him. I think this is a phenomenal goal. It's not an easy goal. Letou gives him a tough ball around defenders, and he's running with pace, and he's able to put it in.
It's a turf goal.
Yeah.
It reminded me, I'm going way back here, but it reminded me of Pitufo Diavola with the Red Bulls back in 96 and 97.
Ooh. The Red Bulls?
Yeah. Sorry, with the Metro Stars back in 96 and 97. And he scored, I think, a dozen goals or so, and most of them were by driving it into the turf and getting a pretty unpredictable bounce.
Yeah, that
crazy top-spin goalkeepers.
Yeah. How about that draft? How about that draft for the Union this year? You get Yarrow, you get Keegan Rosenberry, and you get Fabian Herbers. That's Pantheon stuff.
Yeah, and it looks – Yarrow may be the least successful of those three. I think there's a possibility of that.
It
is early, but I think with Yarrow, I don't know that he has the size. I don't know that he fits a position exactly.
Yep.
But Rosenberry looks phenomenal.
Was the concern.
And Herbers, even if he's not more than just a top 13 guy, that's still great.
Yep, no doubt about that. David Akam is more than that. He certainly is. He dominated the Fort Lauderdale Strikers in a 3-0 win for the Fire. A big win for them. Their season so far has not been overwhelmingly positive. This is a good opportunity for them to go chase a trophy. Galiagabasamundan. Oh, man. Yeah, I had that. And then I got caught up on the AG combination there, and it just threw me off. I mean, I handled that about as well as he handled David Akam 1v1 in the open field. David Akam made him do a 360 and fall down in this game and then set up DeLu for a goal in this one. A big win for the Chicago Fire. They will move on and face New England in the semifinals. On the other side of the bracket right now, it's going to be Dallas and the Los Angeles Galaxy. Dallas with a 1-0 win against Houston. Fabian Castillo does what he does. He basically ran a circle around the Houston defense and put it in past Willis. So a good game for him. A professional win, I think Oscar Pareja called it. They just got it done. It was efficient. On the other side, some terrible giveaways in L.A., Seattle, Doyle. I mean, these are maybe two of the worst giveaways I've ever seen from Leonardo and Zach Scott. What was going on here? And then, of course, Jesse Zardes and GDS come in and absolutely change the game.
Yeah, I mean, it's just a – I don't know. It's just typical Open Cup stuff. We see wild lapses in judgment, and it just seems like this tournament has a way of bringing that out of certain players. You don't expect to see it from Zach Scott, though.
You don't.
Because he's been here so many times, and he has been so reliable for the Sounders, especially in this tournament. I think Sounders fans are at their wit's end right now. And, you know, this was supposed to be the silver lining, and it has been so many times for them over the years. Obviously not the case and kind of back to the drawing board a little bit.
And we thought that they would take this as seriously as they could because they didn't have anything else to win. Dempsey suspended, but it's not a strong line. It wasn't an A lineup from Seattle. Mm-hmm. And that's, I think, where the question has to be, because what are you holding guys out for? And so what else is there at this point? You might still think you can make a run at the playoffs. That's fine. But you're sitting in a quarterfinal right here, and you have the opportunity. L.A. didn't play an A-plus
lineup. You had a lead. Like, regardless, you had a lead. You had a 2-1
lead. Right, well, they made strong subs. I mean, they brought on Morris, Evans, and Christian Roldan. So they made strong subs, but you're making strong subs to a lineup that wasn't ready to go into L.A. and win a game. And then L.A. brings Giovanni Dos Santos and Zardes off the bench, and they were the two best players on the field.
Yeah, Zardes, that he brings down that 75-yard boot by Diop and then just sets up Legette for the fourth goal. I mean, a really nice game from him. Continues to perform for the Galaxy. This is the way it'll go down in the semis. August 9th, New England will host Chicago. That one's at 8 p.m. Eastern. And then a day later on August 10th, L.A. hosting Dallas. The final hosting priority, so if this team is there in the final, they will host Chicago, number one. So if they make it there, they for sure host L.A. Galaxy 2, Dallas 3, Revolution 4. So they will not host a U.S. Open Cup final. But we are in the semis. That is exciting stuff. This weekend, though, a very big one for MLS and a very big one here in New York City. The New York Derby heating up once again. This is the third game. RJ Allen will be a part of it once again, and he's on the other side of the break. We'll see you then.
Fans, we want to hear from you. You're encouraged to email extratime at mlssoccer.com or tweet at Extratime Radio with any comments, questions, or reactions.
Back now on Extra Time Radio with the guys, David Goss, Matt the Armchair Analyst Doyle. I am Andrew Wiebe. We are into the second segment. RJ Allen, absolute ledge RJ Allen, will be joining us here in just a bit. The New York City FC defender certainly is a cult hero around here. We explained why, but maybe we'll ask him about that weekend. I don't want to embarrass him or anything like that, though. I don't know how he'll react to something like that. But you can watch the game on Sunday, 1 p.m. on Fox in the U.S., MLS Live in Canada. This is a huge opportunity for New York City FC, not just because they can put some space between themselves and the rest of the pack in the Eastern Conference with a win. They are in first right now, despite Doyle's, trepidation earlier in the season, but because it would give them their first all-time, their season series victory in this rivalry. They got shellacked last year. They got worked. They got embarrassed.
Does winning 2-1 overtake losing 7-0 at home?
I don't know, Doyle, does it? I mean, you have a little insight into the Red Bulls fan culture. Would that count?
I think that, yeah, absolutely. Winning 2-1 is like that seals the season series. I mean, that said, 7-0 is going to be remembered forever in this rivalry, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
100%. How could it not be? I mean, you got ran off the field.
Now, yeah, at home.
At home. So they go to they're going to Red Bull Arena now. I mean, they're better on the road.
Yeah. And Red Bull Arena is a great facility for them to play in because it's a wide open field. It's one of the best, grass fields in the league. And they're going to try and play out of the back. And Red Bulls are going to try and high press them. And they beat them in the last game, but it looked at times like by a hair. I mean, they were playing balls off the goal kicks to Brilliant and Hernandez right next to the penalty box that it felt like they hadn't watched the tape from the first game, but it worked. So
break down this matchup for me, Doyle. The style matchup.
I mean, we've seen it all year with the Red Bulls. They still have the same high pressure. I think they're struggling to create the same or to finish the same types of chances that they've been creating for a year and a half now under Jesse Marsh. And they have the same weakness. They let teams with speedy direct wingers get out into transition. And when that happens, you could crack them open. And we saw Chris Pontius do it. We saw Jack Harrison do it the last time these teams played. We've seen Patrick Nyarko have a good game against the Red Bulls. This is the problem for New York. And Jesse Marsh had some very harsh words for his right backs, both Sal Zizo and Chris Duval, after last week's 2-2 draw against the Union. That is it in a nutshell. New York's high pressure, can they turn that into goals versus NYCFC's ability to get out and transition on the break and turn that into goals. And I just need to say one thing. Harrison has gotten most of the love here, and he has been, I think, the biggest game changer for NYCFC, because teams, they have to account for him in a way that you don't have to account for a ton of guys in this league. But Frank Lampard has been excellent since he finally got healthy. And what he does is play in a lot of ways like a number nine, because he'll receive the ball with his back to goal, with defenders coming at him, and then shield them and complete very useful passes. A lot of times it's just turning over his left shoulder and booting a ball into space for Harrison to run onto. That, I mean, it's simple stuff. It's basic soccer, but it's a simple game, and keeping it simple works.
One of the things that I see with the Red Bulls, and I agree with Doyle, is that they still from last year struggle to break teams down when they don't get turnovers from the high press. But Perrinel is back. He wasn't there in the last matchup. He hasn't been there all season. And he's a big part of what the attacking buildup can be for them. So that's, I think, the shining light right now for Red Bulls fans. And Mario Balotelli coming down the street.
Soon. Soon. Very soon, Super Mario. Let's go to, let's call him an all-star snub. RJ Allen, right back for New York City FC. He's on the line now. RJ, what's up, man?
So well, guys. How are you?
We're doing really, really well. You had a little delay here for lunch. We're curious what's for lunch. We're sitting in the studio, a little bit hungry ourselves. What's on the plate?
For me, I got some couscous. I got some potatoes and some pasta. So
a carbo load.
Yeah, carbo load before the game, huh?
Yeah, a little bit.
So let's go way back here, because, you know, some people I'm sure know you and are familiar with you, and I have to tell you, around these offices, you're kind of a cult hero, but others may not understand the journey that you took to get to this point. It hasn't always been smooth sailing, hasn't always been straightforward. Start us from the beginning. You want to become a pro player, you're at Monmouth, you get drafted in the supplemental draft by Chivas USA, that's a throwback in itself, and then what? How did you get here?
Yeah, absolutely. I appreciate the support, guys. It's been a bit of a whirlwind for sure. Over the past year and a half, 2 years here with New York City. But I started out at Chivas. Went from Chivas to Denmark. Played a season in Denmark, and then came home, and I wasn't really getting the opportunity that I really wanted as quick as I wanted. So I came home, and I was training with DC. To stay fit, they didn't offer me a contract. That was the same year that they had that really bad year where they won, I think it was 3 or 4 games for the whole season. Then from there, I went to Orlando City, trained there, trained at the Cosmos, and I really wanted to be in the MLS. So just kept waiting around for my opportunity, and then New York City came about. Before the season started, the opening season, I was training with David and Mike Grella and the staff over at Ramapo College, just training to stay fit, getting ready for preseason. Was hoping I'd get a call up into preseason, but unfortunately it didn't work out. I didn't get called in, and I was obviously really disappointed. But I just kept working hard, staying fit. I knew that once I got my opportunity, I would take advantage of it, and New York City got off to a slow start, and they called me in to train. They had a couple injuries, and I trained here for 4 days, and on the fifth day I came in, and the staff over here had a contract written up for me, and I was just delighted and really excited to get things started. And that's where I am today, and I'm really happy and blessed to be in the situation that I'm in.
You kind of glossed over it there, but you, Mike Grella, and you said David. You guys are obviously first-name basis. That's David Villa for those out there that may not know that. What was that like? I mean, essentially, you're training with David to keep him fit and ready for the upcoming season. I mean, that's kind of a bizarre situation to be in, no?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, whenever you get a chance to train with a player like that, it's a great opportunity and something that you need to take advantage of. But I was also doing it for myself to stay fit, you know. I wanted to stay fit and get ready for a preseason, whether it was with New York City or another club. So I was just waiting for my opportunity, and sure enough, that opportunity came about 2 months into the year, and that's where I am now.
What was that like? I mean, what were you doing in this training session with him? How were you keeping yourself prepared? And I have to imagine in the back of your mind that whole time was thinking, yeah, I'm trying to stay fit, but I'm also trying to make connections. And it seems like maybe that was one way you were able to make connections to get with New York City FC and then obviously get and take advantage of the opportunity you have now.
Yeah, I think I was given that opportunity because of my relationship with Jason and the staff from the 2012 Combine. So that's how I got called in. And then, obviously, whenever you hear the likes of WB in there, you want to show well, obviously, because you're playing in front of the staff. You're playing in front of the staff that you want to play for, and you want to show well. So whenever you play against a player like WB, it's a great opportunity. And it was just a great opportunity for myself, and I was blessed at the time.
So from that training, you know, Mike Grella's there as well. He's starting to pick up the nickname Grelladina. You have the secrets to stop him, right?
Absolutely.
But you're not going to give those to us, huh? I mean, that was quick. We were like waiting for the next beat for what it was going to. Do you have a fancy nickname? I mean, you got Grelladino. Have the guys at the team in New York given you anything?
Yeah, no, I just try to keep it simple and do what I do best. And that's it.
So you're keeping it
simple, from what I understand.
You're keeping it simple, man, but you got the 50-yard assist to David. You have a bunch of really nice moments this year. Around the office, I kind of mentioned it, you're a little bit of a cult hero because you have the story, but you also have the on-the-field product. And I think that's what excites so many people, especially NYC fans. Tell me about getting into the position to play and then having a stranglehold on that outside back spot. You have not given up on that. It seems like you've grown from game to game to game. How have you felt about your performance and how things have gone?
Yeah, definitely. I'm always trying to get better, and I'm always trying to make each performance better than the last. Just trying to take advantage of every opportunity you're given, you know, because if you don't, there's going to be someone else that's going to step right in and try to take your spot. So every time in training, every day in training, every day, at every match that we come across, it's important that I'm locked in and I'm on board that there's no mistakes, because there's always someone else behind you that is looking to take your spot. So the second you slack off and you're not tuned in is the second you can lose your spot. So you always got to be locked in and ready to go. So just take advantage of every opportunity, like I said, and continue to get better from game to game. And
this is a huge matchup on Sunday for a lot of fans, a lot of, you know, tension and rivalry, but for you it's unique because of what goes on in your family. Maybe a lot of people don't know, your younger brother is playing right now for New York Red Bulls, a homegrown player, Brandon Allen, playing mainly for the USL team. Take us inside the household a little bit. What's the rivalry like? Do your parents wear the split jerseys? Are they wearing anything?
So there's a recent article that just came out on MLS Soccer. I don't know if you guys saw it. My aunt put together a shirt. She sewed a shirt together, half New York Red Bull, half New York City. So it's pretty interesting. But, obviously there's always going to be bickering going on between myself and Brandon, joking around. Once the whistle blows and those 90 minutes are in play, we'll compete against each other. We'll battle, and whatever happens, happens. But once the final whistle blows, he's my brother, and I love him. And that's it.
How competitive was it growing up? I mean, I'm assuming you two probably competed in everything, but especially soccer. Sometimes you got to search for someone to face off against, and you had an in-house opponent at all times to train with.
Yeah, definitely. I think my parents did a really good job of always making sure we competed, you know, whether it was, you know, playing soccer in the backyard or playing against each other in chess in the kitchen table. My family always brought that competitive edge, that competitive environment, and being around three brothers and one sister, that will come out automatically, right? So just really happy with how things have gone here at New York City, and I owe a lot to my parents for putting me in a good situation and a good environment each day to make me succeed.
Who's the better chess player?
have to say myself.
That's a good answer. Good answer. Older brothers always going to say themselves in that case. You talked about Jason Kreiss, and of course, he's now moved on. He's with Orlando City. That was just announced the other day. Patrick Vieira in. You guys are in first place. There seems to be confidence just coursing through the squad. Frank Lampard doing his thing. What's the biggest difference between year one and year two of New York City FC? What do you see as being kind of the thing that's helped push you guys over the top when it comes to results?
I think with this group compared to last year, there's a real togetherness in our group. I think everyone's on the same page, and Patrick pulls the best out of each and every player every day in training and on every match day. He's just been great since he's come on board, and we're really happy to have him. And I'm blessed to be in a situation to play for him and just try to take advantage of every opportunity given to me, like I said earlier, and continue to get better as a player. But like I said, just the togetherness with this group and the tactical awareness that Patrick brings.
When you go to training every day, you get to rub shoulders and work with as a colleague, as a peer, with guys like Patrick and David Villa and Frank Lampard and Andrea Pirlo and up and down that roster. What's that like? What's it like to walk into training every day? I mean, I'm sure at this point you've gotten past the any indication that there could be any sort of starstruck reaction, but these guys are elite players and coaches and presences within the game. How does that change the way your day-to-day is at work?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, whenever you're around guys like that, you try to take advantage of your time with them. Just try to see how they go about their everyday business. I know they're some of the hardest working guys. So just try to take advantage of every opportunity that you have with them, learn from them, and just continue to get better as a player and as a person each and every day.
Take me behind David Villa, and I think that he is one of the most underrated players in the league. And that's crazy to say about a guy like David Villa who's done everything he's done. But I watch your guys' games, and I see him tracking back 50 yards. I see him, after you win a game, going crazy about a small detail that wasn't right. I mean, it seems like this guy is kind of the epitome of what you want these big money designated player signings to be. What's he like in training? What's he like as a person? Obviously, you've got a relationship with him that goes back before you were even on the team.
Yeah, absolutely. He's the hardest working guy you'll ever come across. He's very competitive, and he wants to win more than anyone out on the field, and I think that rubs off on all of us. He's our leader at the end of the day, and we support him, and we're behind him, and if he's going to compete like that, I think everyone else on the field is going to follow. So he's just been a tremendous leader since he's been on board, and everyone just follows in his footsteps.
RJ, we'll let you get to lunch in a minute, but I got to ask, you're from New Jersey originally. Now you, of course, playing for NYC. Were you a New York Red Bulls fan or Metro Stars fan?
I grew up watching the Metro Stars for sure. Went to a few matches. Obviously went and saw a few Red Bull matches growing up as well. Obviously from the home area, just watching a lot of soccer and grew up around the game. So whenever you get a chance to go see a soccer game, you're going to take advantage of it.
And now you have an opportunity to get the 2-1 aggregate victory here. I mean, I guess not aggregate, but 2-1 this season if you can win this one. After having such a drought against the Red Bulls previously, New York City FC, what would it mean to the team, to fans here in the city, if you guys were able to win this one, not only to get the 2-1, but on enemy turf in New Jersey? How much does this game mean?
Yeah, it means a great deal. It means a lot to us and a lot to our fans, so we're going to put everything into the match, and hopefully we can come away with 3 points. Yeah, just like I said earlier, just really excited about the match. It's a really important one, not only because it's against the Red Bull, but it's important for our standing. So we want to stay top of the table. That's where we are right now. We want to continue to keep things rolling here. We've been playing really well the last couple of weeks, and we just want to keep things rolling and keep moving forward as a group.
First place New York City FC headed to Red Bull Arena on Sunday, 1 p.m. Eastern on Fox. You can also watch that in Canada on MLS Live. RJ Allen will be on the field doing his thing. RJ, we appreciate your time, man. Get to lunch, and we'll catch you on Sunday, okay?
Thank you, guys. I appreciate it. Thanks for taking the time.
Big thanks to RJ Allen. We've been trying to get him on here for a long, long time, and he thanked us for the support, Dave. How do you feel about that?
I feel bashful. Because he should
you are blushing.
He shouldn't have to thank. He knows that he earned it, every single bit of it. I would love to have a video of Brandon and RJ Allen just sitting in a pizza shop talking shop, because I mean, how great is that? They're on two sides of this rivalry.
Yeah, it's pretty special.
And they are two, like, physical specimens, too. I mean, these are two athletic guys.
No doubt, no doubt. You've been physically the way –
Brandon Allen is huge. Yeah, Brandon Allen is a big guy. He could knock a few people over. I can imagine that backyard soccer games had a lot of broken stuff.
Well, let me ask you this, because you watch a lot of Red Bulls, too. Why too has much. He not gotten a look by the MLS team?
I think right now he – isn't as efficient a finisher as you'd love. And the question is he a target forward? Because his, you know, I think he's going to suffer from something Kenny Cooper suffered from. He looks like one guy. He plays like another guy. So can the Red Bulls find a way to get the best out of him? He's gotten one run out, but you would think Anatole Abong would be ahead of him. Abong hasn't performed. So there's still question marks there for New York.
There you go. The breakdown for our very own David Goss. Moving on Sunday, the next game after that, you can go back-to-back with these, is Sporting Kansas City and Seattle. Sunday, 3 p.m. Eastern, ESPN in the U.S., MLS Live, north of the border. I know we throw around must-win all the time, Doyle, and it's just kind of this crutch that it gets used in sports commentary, but are Kansas City looking at their schedule saying, we might have to go to that cliche, because it's getting a little iffy for them?
Yeah, this is their 12th home game of the year. They only have five left after this. They're not a very good road team at all, and they're below the red line. If they are going to make the playoffs, they have to collect as many home points as possible, especially against teams that are below them. And that's where the Sounders are. If Sporting don't make the playoffs, they will look to game and, you know, assuming they don't win in this one, they will look to games like this and say, this is where we blew it. And against a team like the Sounders, who are leaky defensively, who are sporadic offensively, and who are probably pretty demoralized coming off of the Portland loss and the midweek loss to LA, there's no excuses for Sporting anymore. And, you know, we've spent a lot of time on them this year, trying to analyze what's going wrong, and kind of throw that in the trash. Just stop screwing up. Stop screwing up. That's it.
That's it.
That analysis comes directly from an armchair.
Good point. Good point. I am lounging as well, so, you know, mine's not exactly coming from a place of...
Not part of your brand, though, we mean.
Difficulty. That's true. That's true. Friday night, it all starts off. Unimas, Viernes de Football, Real Salt Lake, and San Jose. Big news here, the Panamaniacs both had their red cards rescinded. So they get the win with nine men, San Jose do against Toronto FC. Then they get both their boys back, so Godoy and Quintero will be able to play in this game. We're talking about must win. Well, it's maybe not must win for RSL, but it's big. They're winless in five. Three of the next four are on the road, so they need a result here at home against San Jose pretty badly. On Saturday, I mean, there's all sorts of national TV games this weekend. You can get those on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. That's because at 3 p.m. on Saturday, Portland and LA Galaxy go at it, and SportsCenter is going to be there, which I did not know about, Dave, but you informed me of.
Yeah, they're going to do SportsCenter live from the road at Providence Park. They're
going to inside Providence Park,
yeah,
right?
They're going to have some features with different players, Darlington Nagby and stuff. It just makes it that much bigger an event, which from – actually, it's funny. A guy I worked with recently who was not a soccer fan was in Portland for a fish show, I'm sure, or something like that.
Yeah.
And went to the Timbers game last week and was, like, in love with it.
Blown away. Texting me,
are you watching the Timbers right now, which I happen to be. Midweek game, and he was like, this is unbelievable, and it's a Wednesday night game. And I was like, yeah, those fans seem to know what they're doing.
Yeah, this has the looks of a really good game, and you see Diego Valeri come back, and Matt has harped on it. The guy is an easy MVP candidate. Fernando Adi crushing it. Both these teams figuring things out. I'm still looking for that game changer aspect of Darlington Nagby's game in MLS. We just haven't seen it enough this season.
Guys, he doesn't get into the box. If you watch his game, if you watch the way he plays, compare him to Valeri. Compare him even to Benny Failhaber, who's a much deeper lying type of playmaker. They at least sometimes get into the box and get shots off from, you know, 8 to 10 to 12 yards out.
High percentage shots.
Yes, Nagby never gets those. Never, ever gets those. He's still so passive around the box.
Yeah, I like the complete field runs he pulls off, and he can create that way. But
and he
right.
completes a very high percentage of his passes, which is his style of game, the quick passing in the midfield. But like Doyle's saying, I mean, physically he's capable of doing what all of those guys do and more. So at some point we have to start seeing it consistently because we have seen it in flashes. That's why we want it. That's why we expect it. We're not asking him to do things that he's incapable of. We're asking him to do things that we've seen him do at times.
Perhaps we doth ask too much of him. 3 p.m. Eastern, ESPN on Saturday, a big match, Portland-LA Galaxy. The Galaxy starting to round into form. Really, really starting to figure things out.
What a surprise. Bruce Arena's team
shocking.
In the mid and late summer.
Yeah, very weird. Very weird.
Right,
that's quite strange. First and second in the entire league as well as in the Western Conference. Saturday night, Colorado FC Dallas. This is your MLS Live match of the week, and for damn good reason. This is a hell of a game. 9 p.m. Eastern. This is the one where I, like, you know, I have people saying, like, hey, dinner, you want to? No, I'm not doing it tonight. We can do it on Friday night, maybe before that 11 p.m. This game, I'm watching. The Rapids, as we said last show, 14 games unbeaten. The Research Bear broke it down for us in that sense.
This is where we get our answer for all of you being wrong.
Oh,
FC Dallas,
yeah, this is where we get our answer. What answer, what answer are we going to get?
Colorado Rapids are going to come out
with
a victory. There's no Jermaine Jones, right? FC Dallas isn't missing anyone big right now. Mm-hmm. FC Dallas, they didn't play an A team against Seattle. Outside of that, they look very good right now. It looks like Diaz is playing as well as we've seen him. And Castillo and Urruti scoring again. And Barrios is out on the field. And Acosta's where he should be. But I still think Colorado at home, not having a midweek game, gets the victory.
Where do the goals come from, Doyle? Because we've talked about this. And, you know, that's like, if they can score goals, all of a sudden they're the complete package because that defense is solid in the midfield. They've got a great spine going right now, and their understanding seems to be good. Tim Howard's in goal. When do the goals start coming, and how will they come?
I mean, they have two DP strikers, so it should be coming from Doyle and Gashi. But it's not so much those individuals as it is the way they play. They don't create a high volume of chances. They don't even create a lot of, you know, a low volume of very good chances. They are a smash and grab team. They take full advantage of their home field advantage and specifically the altitude. And if you look at it this year, they've scored so many goals in the last 15 minutes of the game at home, including the winner last week against Sporting KC. It's pure opportunism and it's working for this group. So you got to tip your cap. The thing I wonder though is, will Dallas actually come out with a first team? Will they play Mauro Diaz just 3 or 4 days after a U.S. Open Cup game? Will Fabian Castillo go from the start? Or will they say, you know what, we're gonna you know, pull the Rapids' own trick on them. We're going to come out, sit deep in a 4-4-2 or a 4-5-1, and we're just purely going to hit on the counterattack with these very physical and robust, but maybe not so creative players. I suspect that's what we'll see from Oscar Pereja, because I don't think he wants to play guys like Diaz and Castillo back-to-back on short rest at altitude.
Either way, it's huge. Castillo scored in the 91st minute. They would have had to play an extra 30 minutes at least in that game, so that was pretty big.
Yeah, pretty important. Oscar Pereja is pragmatic. I also think he's a guy that doesn't like to give away his bullets, and this is a team that he's going to see later on down the season. No doubt about that. A special connection between Pereja and the Rapids as well. Remember, that's where he started his professional head coaching career. A quick note, Weston McKinney, who we've talked about on this show, a really talented young attacking midfielder for Dallas in their academy. A little bit of a pull of war right now. Tug of war between FCD and Schalke, apparently. He went over to Germany, but FC Dallas say they're trying to negotiate a deal with him. Something to keep your eye on. A deal that did get done, Columbus Crew SC picking up a new defender from Stabæk, probably a guy who knows Bob Bradley pretty well. Nikolai Ness, a 23-year-old center back out of the Norwegian League. We'll see how that goes. Definitely, familiar hunting grounds, let's say, for Greg Berhalter in Scandinavia. We'll see if that works out better than the Larsen signing, I believe.
All of them. They've all not gone well. They all leave in the middle of the season.
Gone pretty well.
Yes, but outside of that, everyone just leaves in the middle of the season.
Yeah, we'll see if that one works out for them. They take on Orlando, 7:30 p.m. on Saturday on MLS Live. Also on MLS Live, also at 7:30 p.m., Montreal and Philadelphia. Philly in a little mini slump. Montreal have been in a slump. We'll see which one of those teams can bust it in that game. The Revs in Chicago, a little preview of the U.S. Open Cup, also at 7:30 on MLS Live. So I hope you have a lot of screens on Saturday night to keep up with all this. Oh, yeah, 7:30 again. TFC, DC United, you're going to have to quad box this one. Another big game. Josie could return in this game, so that's reason enough to watch this one. And then the weekend gets finished off, at least for Saturday, with Houston and Vancouver at 9:30 p.m. Eastern. TSN and MLS Live. Little note here, Steve Goff, you probably know him from the Washington Post, says there's interest from abroad, no specifics there as it regards to Giles Barnes. What that means, I'm not sure, but you figure Houston are going to be making some moves in this window if they want to turn things around as well. Anything you want to chime in about, anything you want to talk about, let us know. At Extra Time Radio, extratime at MLSsoccer.com. With that, we are headed to the mailbag where Bill Carroll finally gets his due.
Fans, we want to hear from you. You're encouraged to email extratime at MLSsoccer.com or tweet at extratime radio with any comments, questions, or reactions.
Back now, Extra Time Radio. Into the mailbag, Bill Carroll has got us. I think something's off with his memory, Dave. I mean, what's he talking about here?
I don't know. Maybe I'm just so used to reading Bill Carroll emails that I don't notice.
I mean,
that
I
we
know
don't
what
read them
section
on the show.
He's in without even looking.
Yeah.
132, of course.
He says, "You guys have not read an email of mine since Simon Borg was a regular on the show." Not true, Bill Carroll.
Definitely not true.
Either you're not listening or you need to get out of my face right now.
Boom.
I hope this makes the cut. Well, it did. Nice job trolling us, and then you won, so I guess it worked out. Why are we playing the biggest game of our season at 1 p.m. in July? I realize sometimes they're trying to line up with Champions League or national team, but unless I miss something, I don't think this is the case. It looks like the weather is going to play a big part in this one, 90 degrees or better. But the only good thing, P.S., he says, is the early start means they get a great breakfast tailgate.
There's not, you know what? I think a breakfast tailgate, to me, that's the elite tailgate, because you get to do that one. You go into the game. And then you've got all day afterwards to do whatever you want. You
post-gate.
Can go back to the tailgate.
Post-gate,
you could go
yeah.
to the bar if you wanted to. You go home and take a nap and then go out later.
You
maybe
could
go
watch
dinner.
Sporting KC face off against Seattle.
Yeah, maybe you have a TV in the back of your truck in the lot. I mean, there's a lot to be done there. As far as the weather goes, I mean, that's just part of MLS in July and August, right, in a lot of markets. I mean, it's not like at 7 p.m. it's going to be balmy. It's still going to be really hot.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
the,
I
yeah.
don't know.
Well,
I mean, I'm okay
yeah.
with it.
Okay.
Let's go to Jacob from Lima in Ohio. He's a Crew fan. He says, listening to Monday's show, Andrew was talking about the altitude and something about running upstairs in Colorado. Would this have happened to be at the Manitou Incline? He did that for the first time a few weeks ago. As a Midwesterner, it was a beast. But as a marathoner, he thought it was an enjoyable challenge. Also, he got to witness Howard's first game back in MLS while he was out there. Now, he's
I'm not
connecting with you, a marathoner
yeah,
to marathoner.
No, no. No, this was just from like a campfire to a cooler in a garage. This was not some special thing. This was like, yeah, this was just me struggling to breathe in altitude. But I really respect his, you know, his desire to challenge himself.
Let's go to KC, Joey Jedlowski, and Doyle. This one, I think, is perfectly set up for you. We've been talking about FC Dallas and the Chicago Fire putting together USL teams. He goes, I'm a Sporting KC fan. And this year, Sporting introduced their own affiliate called Swope Park Rangers and ended their relationship with OKC Energy they had for a few seasons. So far, I've not seen anything significantly different about their relationship with the Rangers than what it was with the Energy from the previous year. They're still loaning out and calling back players in the same way they did with the Energy. It doesn't seem like brand new players are getting first team minutes as a result of their relationship. Is he missing something? Is it going to take a while? Is it purely just a geographical and logistic thing? What is it that he's missing?
Logistics is a big deal. Logistics means being able to train at the same facilities and with the same sort of staff and come up through the same program. So I think it is logistical, and that is actually a bigger deal than Joey's giving it credit for. That said, I think Sporting and Oklahoma City had a tighter relationship than maybe any other MLS USL affiliates, so it's maybe not as big a difference as what we would see from, let's say, the Revs get their own team next year. They would be much tighter with that with the, we'll call them, you know, the Providence Minutemen than they have been with the Rochester Rhinos. So I think you can't downplay logistics when it comes to having a second team. At the same time, it is disappointing that we're not seeing more and more coming through the sporting system. Hopefully, by this time next year, the conversation's different.
I'm surprised Doyle didn't want to name that team the Hartford Belugas or something closer to that.
Put it right in Hartford, huh? Yeah, that is a surprise. Hey, look, thanks to you guys. Thanks to RJ Allen. That's all we have on this Thursday. Make sure you check out the action this weekend. National TV games Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. With that, we will see you on Monday when we will have, hint, hint, an interview with Ivan Gazidis.
You're listening to Extra Time Radio.